This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
The Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre presents Well, Well, Well on Joy, the show that's all about sex, health and well-being.
Joy, Joy, Joy.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Well, 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 brought to you each week by the VAC, Victorian AIDS Council. I'm Tex, and my co-hosts today are Jack and Jesse. Before we go on, we need to thank Derek for the news and the gorgeous Gazman for the morning show. Hi, everyone. How are you today?
I'm well. I'm just over this winter. I'm waiting for spring.
I know. Spring. They got us excited last week, didn't they? And so now we've got a taste of the goodness, but we'll be coming back soon. Just wrap up with that lovely fur, John.
Yeah. No, thank you. Thank you.
Now, before we go any further, last week we mentioned Holding the Man. Now, Jack, you were there on Thursday night at the VAC fundraiser.
I was.
How did you enjoy the movie?
I thought it was terrific. I think it's a really good adaptation from the book. Much better, if I may say so, than the play was.
Oh, right. I heard there were lots of tears as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was powerful. It was very moving. And I don't know whether people are aware, but I met John way back in the early 90s.
Okay.
He was seeking our services. So I couldn't believe how much he resembled the actor, Craig Stott, resembled the actual person.
Oh, really?
John Calio. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
And the movie is released this Thursday, the 27th of August. So do check out the theatres and see where you can see the movie. And I will add the little rider. Make sure you stay until the end of the credits because
yes.
There's a little extra surprise right at the very end before the curtains close in the theatre.
I know. And so many people left before it finished.
Indeed. I know. That's a shame.
Yeah.
Well, when I go, I will keep that in mind.
Stay in your seat.
So for anyone who's just tuned in, this is indeed Well, 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 every week here on Joy 94.9, brought to you by the Victorian AIDS Council.
That's right, Tex, and at Well, 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 we talk about topics that relate to the GLBTI community, and we are all about sex, health and your well-being.
And today we have two very special guests with us, Sky Hussey and Daniel Brace from Living Positive Victoria, our sister organisation, with the important topic of syphilis and living with HIV and their latest campaign to stamp out syphilis.
Yes, indeed. So last week we touched slightly on syphilis, not in very much detail, but we'll be going into it a little bit more with our two very special guests today. And we would really love for everyone to join in the conversation with us. If you've got any comments or questions, or you want to tell us that we're doing great, or you want something to discuss in the future, please feel free to get in touch. Jack, can you please tell our listeners how they can do this?
With pleasure. The best way to get into contact with us is to email us at onair@joy.org or SMS us on 0427JOY949. Both of which will get us right here into the studio, or you can also message us via Facebook at facebook.com/wellwellwelljoy or call us in the studio 1-300-JOY-949.
Joy.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. Today we're going to be discussing syphilis with Guy and Daniel from Living Positive Victoria.
Now, Daniel, welcome to Well, Well, Well. And to start with, perhaps you can tell us a little bit about Living Positive Victoria, your mission and who your client community are, please.
Thanks, Jack. Hello, listeners. I'm Daniel of Living Positive Victoria. We're an organisation that represents, works with and works for people living with HIV in Victoria. So that means that we run a number of programs and services. We have programs for people who are newly diagnosed with HIV. Other
that
programs,
being Phoenix.
Yeah, that's the one, Phoenix. Yep. Yeah, that's been running for quite a while, and that's a really great weekend workshop for people who are newly diagnosed that can meet other people in a similar situation, talk about HIV, find out a bit of information as well about HIV. We run other programs for sort of ongoing care and support to improve the quality of life and life of people living with HIV. And we also work in prevention and anti-stigma. Our campaign Enough has been seen over a couple of years at places like Carnival and other festivals as well. We work really closely with Joy. We work really closely with the Victorian AIDS Council. So it's lovely for us to be invited here.
Yay.
Thank you. And I have a disclosure to make.
Yep.
I don't know. Don't go breaking my heart. Either version. So that was a lovely choice.
Well,
so
Daniel,
it's okay.
Daniel, you were born after the first version came out.
Right.
There you go.
Possibly. Guy, you've joined in the studio today to chat about your syphilis campaign, and more specifically to talk about syphilis and HIV. Why is Living Positive Victoria focusing on this?
Well, I guess the big thing is that, you know, as Daniel just said, you know, the organisation is about prevention in a lot of ways, and that is prevention of forward transmission of HIV, but also ensuring quality of life for people living with HIV. And syphilis is currently up there as a pretty big issue within Victoria, in particular for gay men living with HIV. And I'm going to be umming, so the listeners just love it. And it's an important issue. I guess there's a lot of history. It's known as the Great Pretender syphilis because it can mimic, it is said historically to have mimicked a lot of things.
Insidious, isn't it?
Yeah, you could say in a whole lot of ways, Jack. So we'll just keep on amusing ourselves with syphilis as we go. But it's an important issue. There's three stages of syphilis, which we'll touch on later.
Yeah.
But primarily at the moment, we're seeing a huge number or proportion of gay men, and in particular gay men living with HIV, presenting with what's defined as a newly acquired syphilis, and that's defined pretty much as a diagnosis in 2 years of acquiring syphilis, and that can be either the initial infection, and then again there is the element of reinfection, which we'll touch on later as well. So it is an important issue, and it's one that the statistics are currently sort of blowing out of proportions. So it really is looking at how do we encourage membership, gay men living with HIV, to start getting on top of their sexual health testing in respect to situating their sexual health needs outside of HIV care and monitoring. So, Tex, that's why it's an important issue.
Thank you, Guy.
Joy 94.9.
Are you a regular listener to our Joy podcast service? Like what you hear? Tell us. Email production@joy.org.au. Tell us something that you've heard that you've particularly enjoyed, and we'll pass it on to the volunteers of our podcast service. Our Joy program production team is made up of around 30 volunteers, and we'd love to hear your thoughts. Again, email production@joy.org.au. And if you love what we're doing, why not support us as a Joy member? You can become a Joy member anytime, online at joy.org.au or call 1300 569 949. Thanks for supporting the diverse sound of a diverse crowd. Joy 94.9.
This is Well on Joy 94.9. We're talking to Daniel and Guy from Living Positive for Victoria, and we're talking about syphilis today. So, Guy, can we just jump back in and talk about what the transmission routes for getting infected with syphilis?
Sure. Look, it's, I like to refer pretty much everything STI-wise. It's oral, it's anal, vaginal, and it's skin to skin. So that's where syphilis is commonly, I guess, conflicted or compared a lot to herpes, because it does actually
skin to skin.
Easily transmitted through skin to skin contact, isn't it?
So it's not actually viral shedding as we see with herpes, but it is that skin to skin contact.
And so when in the process of infection will it be transmissible? Like, is there a latent period? Is there a particularly infectious period?
Yeah, so when they refer to newly acquired, newly diagnosed, new infections, it's transmissible any time through that period of time. It can get to a point in time where it is latent syphilis, and that's getting into your secondary and tertiary stages of syphilis. And I'm happy to chat about those now. So you've got primary syphilis. Daniel's going to talk a little bit about that shortly. But then you've got secondary. And what's noted in...
Well, can we just go back? So what does primary syphilis look like?
Well, sometimes it doesn't look like anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
So asymptomatic.
Asymptomatic. It presents... majority of time asymptomatically, so there isn't, you know, in contrast, comparison to a lot of other STIs, there is just no way of telling that something's going on, which is why the big thing is around testing, because people can just think that, oh yeah, I'm good, you know, but it really is just dependent on that testing period.
Yeah. And if there was symptoms, what would they look like?
Well, I believe we've got a syphilis survivor in the studio.
Syphilis survivor. So let's hand over to the syphilis survivor.
A serial
please.
Syphilis survivor, actually.
Do
the
tell.
Lived experience of syphilis. So that's a, I'm putting on a different hat here, but yeah, I'm really happy to share my experience because it is a little bit tricky because it's not quite as obvious as, oh, there's a burning sensation and something's up. And I've had syphilis and cleared or cured syphilis three times. And three times I've had a different experience. So one of those times I had no idea whatsoever. Anything was wrong.
Nothing at all.
No idea.
No burning, no.
It was
discharge.
A regular test, and oh, whoops, you came back with syphilis. And I thought, oh, that's really interesting because I don't feel anything. And then, of course, I had the treatment and everything went away. It was great. Next time, I was just feeling a bit run down. You know, it was like this sort of endless hangover where every morning I was just feeling like a little unwell, but not so unwell. I still went on with doing things, getting on with going to the shopping and all that sort of stuff. And having sex. Yeah, that's right. The guy just mentioned. Yeah, so again, it wasn't really something that I could say, oh, look, that's an infection.
But you had no genital symptoms at all?
No, nothing. But because of my experience previously, I thought, well, let's get a full screen. Let's look at everything just to make sure. And when I say everything, I actually meant iron levels and other things as well. And lo and behold, syphilis attack number 2. But we stamped that one out.
And how long was it between your first and second syphilis attack?
Oh, quite or a...
Infection.
Yeah.
Oh, you said attack. I just used that word again. It's like monster coming out at you. Oh, sorry.
Make it sound more dramatic. But, you know... look, it was a period of months because I had had another test in between, which had showed that it was clear, and also, you know, so that I could kind of get back to my normal routine as well, not being concerned that maybe I could pass something on to somebody else. So it was a period of quite a few months, I'd say. So the next time that it came around, it was that feeling of unwellness and then again, so syphilis. So I thought, oh, I better find out even more if I can about syphilis. So it was really handy we've got this campaign because I found out more. And then the last time it came, I actually noticed a small sore. And that small sore, it wasn't itchy or uncomfortable or
like a
anything.
Canker?
A canker, yeah, that's what the doctors call it. And that's just like a little pimple, but not quite a pimple. And I looked at that and went, oh, hang on a minute. I think I know what that is. And went in and confirmed that and then got treated again. So I think, you know, with all of this stuff, it's about educating ourselves, becoming a little bit more aware of a few more of the signs if possible, and also realizing sometimes you don't see it. You just don't notice.
And when you did have a canker, it didn't necessarily feel like anything.
No. So I just went, oh, it's something on the skin.
You might have thought it was a pimple.
Totally.
Well, at least you know now.
And Daniel, so did you then have to go down the route of letting people know that people you'd had sex with to let them know?
Oh, look, absolutely, yeah. Look, that's something I think that's a really good practice. Mm-hmm. It certainly makes you feel better. Sometimes it's not possible. So, you know, I had, especially the first time when I had no idea that anything was wrong, you know, I don't know. Perhaps I'd been to the sauna, probably had been. And in that case, you know, it's hard to follow up. But wherever possible, I did absolutely try and reach out to those people who I may have had sex with. But again, you know, as you get more sensitive to perhaps symptoms or warning signs, you can be more alert and then get onto it quicker, and then you'll be able to get through to other people as well.
Okay. Thank you, Daniel. It's really good to hear that lived experience.
It really is. Yeah.
Really great.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. So, Guy, can you talk to us a little bit about the testing? What is the testing looking like at the moment? Are we doing enough? What's happening over there?
I think from a point of a perspective of sexual health testing, we're never doing enough because, you know, there's always STIs that are out there present. But what's interesting in particular with gay men who are living with HIV is they were once under 3-monthly HIV care and monitoring. And at that time, their S100s doctors, HIV doctors, would have just run the whole suite of STI testing at that point in time.
Okay.
I'm not sure when, but I couldn't be any longer than 18 months ago, the scripts so people used to be only able to get 3-monthly scripts for their antiretroviral treatments.
Was that in order to try and bring people back within the 3 months?
It was a sort of a structural thing, and that was around prescribing, that a doctor couldn't write essentially a script that wouldn't take them past that 3-month period, and it was around that 3-monthly checkup as well. Because we've got so many people, thankfully, living with essentially undetectable viral loads, the prescribing's gone out to 4 months. So some people have even been pushed back to six monthly appointments with their HIV doctors. So what we're now seeing is the HIV care and monitoring has changed sort of in quite a structural, systemic way. And then the STI testing for those men isn't now happening on as regular basis.
Okay.
They might not have even been aware that they're having a full suite of STI testing every 3 months. So what Stamp Out Syphilis is really about is articulating the need for gay men living with HIV to go back to 3-monthly STI testing.
So do you think that it should really be more of a opt-out situation?
In the context of STI testing?
In the context of STI testing, because it seems that syphilis, you know, it is quite easily passed on, skin-to-skin contact, and it's asymptomatic. So it seems that maybe it would be better if when gay men went to get tested or MSM went to get tested, that instead of saying, hey, I want a syphilis test, they should just get automatically tested anyway.
Well, that's generally what happens when people have their suite of STI testing.
Mm.
They quite literally get tested for everything. But the important thing there is if a person, similar to our Daniel, syphilis survivor. If a person has already had been infected with syphilis once before, they actually need to have that knowledge because a different test needs to be run.
Yeah.
So syphilis is a bacterial infection, but it leaves a trace evidence in the body. So your standard syphilis test from that perspective will always just detect that there is the presence of syphilis. Essentially, a person needs to have sort of a PCR testing done to understand or for their doctors to be able to ascertain if that syphilis infection is within that 2-year period, if it is an infectionally defined as infectious syphilis.
Okay.
Now, Guy, we try not to break into jargon, and it's really difficult because we're so used to talking about in jargon. What's PCR stand for?
Oh, goodness gracious me. It's a polymerase chain reaction test. It's used across, thanks, Tex. I hope I've said that.
Yeah, polymerase.
Yeah. And it's essentially a test that is used for a lot of viruses, a lot of bacterial infections, and it's actually then testing whether there is live virus there or live bacterial infection. Yeah. So does that answer that one for the listener?
It does. Thank you.
Excellent.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, I think it is a case of we should be trying to articulate that, you know, it's really a case of 3-monthly testing. And certainly if a person feels as if there is something going on that's not quite right, you know, Daniel sort of spoke of his experience before, we'd certainly be encouraging people to seek out sexual health testing in between that period of time.
Yeah, because if your HIV is being managed and managed well, and that the testing could, or your check, your monitoring could stretch out 4, 5, 6 months, you need to have other STI checks every quarter.
So it's essentially saying to gay men and MSM living with HIV that, unfortunately, you just need to go back to 3 monthly testing, which is, you know, it's not necessarily a burden, but it's just something that needs to be sort of put out there and explained why we are going with the rationale of test every 3 months for syphilis. And I guess the important thing that commonly does not get articulated, and seems to be the word of my day at the moment, is that gay men living with HIV, they're commonly having sex with other men who are living with HIV, so condoms aren't necessarily present. But there is still the misconception, I will say, out there that condoms can prevent STI acquisition, when we know that use of condoms, they're very good at preventing HIV transmission, but words out on any other
prime
STI.
Prime example, syphilis and herpes, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing. There's that perception still out there that if people are using condoms, that they are protected from other STIs. Yeah, and it's not the case because, let's face it, you know, there's a lot of other activities that would normally happen in a good old sexual encounter before a condom was even rolled on anyway.
And so you're talking about all this testing and that it's frequent and what we should do. Do you have any recommendations of where people we should be going to get tested?
Yeah, look, essentially, people can seek out sexual health testing from any doctor. Okay. The big thing is if you're choosing to, and I'll mention the regular ones in a minute. If you're going to just your normal GP, you need to specify that you want to have STI testing done from all three sites. So that is the throat for pharyngeal, the anus, and penile or urine. Yeah. If you're going to one of your regular doctors, so Prayer Market Clinic, Northside, Melbourne Sexual Health Centre.
And the Centre Clinic.
And the Centre Clinic. Thank you for that, John. And look, I could list.
Yeah.
But they're sort of sexual health savvy, so they'll just automatically know that when they're STI screening, they're testing all three sites.
Yeah, great.
And there would be sites throughout all of Victoria at the regional base hospitals, or perhaps they're not called regional base hospitals anymore?
No, they're just either a base hospital or a hospital.
Okay.
Yes, you can, or a lot of health services. So, you know, if you're out there in Bendigo, for example, or Shepparton, it's the regional health services, so community-based health centres. You can go and access testing from those ones as well.
Now, Guy, this campaign is specifically targeting men who have sex with men or gay and bisexual men.
Who are living with HIV.
Who are living with HIV. What about women living with HIV who are sexually active, who may be engaging in casual sex? Is syphilis or other STIs a concern for them as well?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, STI, good sexual health, runs across the board, you know. And I'd say it runs across the board whether you have a perception or a fundamental belief that you're in a monogamous relationship, or you're getting a bit on the side, or you're just sort of in a polyamorous relationship. Definitely. And I think sometimes that's where doctors can make some assumptions, is that they might be talking to someone and just make a series of assumptions around what their sexual practices are and just sort of say, make the decision that that person doesn't need STI screening.
Oh, really? I feel like that is just... Mm. We should never assume anything about anyone, should we? Especially when it comes to doctors. So, I mean, would you recommend that, you know, when it comes to these kind of things, that people actually go to gay-friendly doctors?
Yeah, and I'd recommend that people recognise that what they're getting from a doctor is a service, so they have got a right to demand good quality service.
Great. Thank you so much, Guy. That was really, really interesting and in-depth. We'll be right back. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
Hi, Jason Gibbs here, Joy 94.9 Production Manager. Want to learn more about radio or audio editing? We're often looking for people to join our team as program production audio producers, responsible for producing podcasts just like this one. Get involved, meet new people, and learn new skills. Join one of the biggest community radio contributors of podcasts by volunteering for Joy's program production team. All skill levels welcome, no prior knowledge of audio production is required, and best of all, training is free for all Joy members. Keep an eye on the volunteer vacancies page at joy.org.au, and if we're looking for people to join our team, it'll tell you how to get involved right there. The Joy 94.9 program production team, powering Joy podcasts. Any show, anytime. Online at joy.org.au.
This is the Well, 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 brought to you each week by the Victorian AIDS Council here on Joy 94.9. Now, Daniel, we'll return to you. We've had a bit of Guy. Daniel, what are the treatment options for syphilis? You'd probably be a really good person to talk us through this.
There are two treatment options. There's eyes open or eyes closed. It's an injection.
Ah, right.
So it depends on how you like to receive that, really.
Eyes closed.
Yeah.
I always love watching the injection or when I get my blood drawn and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, I don't. I prefer eyes closed. So I do normally. Yeah, Tex is looking uncomfortable there. Look, it's really easy, but it does hurt a little. It's a bit ouch. Oh, okay, that's all right. And then you go to sit down. It's like, oh, ouch again. All right. For a little while afterwards. But the good news is that, you know, it's sort of one injection is good.
Just banging, that's all. Yeah, it's okay.
I'm getting sides of
this
studio.
Keep going. It's all right.
It's penicillin. And yeah, it can be.
So is it not taken orally anymore?
No, it's not actually. Although I think Guy's going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute. Okay. But my experience of treatment has always been an injection. Sometimes the doctors can split it up into two littler injections rather than one big one. And that's if you've got your eyes open. If you've opted for eyes open treatment, you'll be able to see how the doctor's preparing it. Because it's quite a syrupy substance. Thick, and they sometimes warm it in their hands because they're sort of rolling it. And I said, well, what's going on here?
It's a bit viscous, isn't it?
And that's when I decided eyes closed might be good for the next two, which, yeah, but it's very easy. So getting treated is easy. And then you go for another check in a little while after that to make sure that you have cleared it in your blood as well.
How do you feel after you've had it? Do you feel any different at all? Or
it's interesting. Yeah, they say that sometimes it can make you feel a bit sick, okay. A bit feverish that evening. And, you know, I experienced different levels of that over the three courses that I had. So the three times that I was treated and then cleared syphilis. You know, one time I think I just went to bed afterwards. It was later in the day and I slept it off. And another time I think I had it during the middle of the day, and then in the afternoon I felt a bit sort of queasy and a little bit sick. Apparently that's a good sign. It means that the penicillin is doing its job, which is good. But you know, just it's about looking after yourself. So if you feel a little bit or if you think that you might feel a bit sick, be kind to yourself. Go home. Have, I don't know, a Zinger burger or something afterwards.
From KFC, next to Joy.
to treat yourself. Something that's going to make you feel good. Feel good. Yeah.
I am definitely having a Zinger burger after this.
Now, you were talking before about primary, secondary and tertiary syphilis.
Yes,
So we've talked about the primary.
Yes.
How do secondary and tertiary manifest themselves?
Listen, I'll just really talk to those in brief. Secondary syphilis, I was about to say syphilis. secondary syphilis can present as, again, a painless rash, either on the palms, and I've just clapped there, not to intimate we've got the clap as well.
It's not where you'd expect to find a rash for a sexually...
No. So, palms of hands, soles of feet, or the trunk of or torso of the body. And it can be a bit itchy, but not necessarily. It can just be this thing, and you're thinking that... what's going on? And I guess there is the notion there, if a person is already immune compromised, that it can move from primary or even asymptomatic to secondary syphilis. quicker.
And if you're not aware of it, if you have no symptoms, you're not, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, the best thing there is just get down to the doctor and get it tested out. Tertiary syphilis, it's an important one to mention, but it is also a little bit redundant because there aren't as many treatment options for tertiary syphilis. And what that is really referring to is that a person has been living for a long time untested, undiagnosed with syphilis, and it has moved to the point where it's compromising the major organs of the body. So it's a bacteria, so it can cross that blood-brain barrier quite easily, and people have been known to have neurosyphilis. And again, treatment options for tertiary syphilis aren't as good.
I suppose that's another motivation to get your regular testing.
Yeah. Most definitely, yeah. And I'd say, you know, for people out there that may not have had regular sexual health testing, tertiary syphilis, it's not an alarmist. We're talking, you know, decades before a person may move into tertiary syphilis. So it's really important for them to know that it's nothing to be afraid of, that test. And did you have a question, Tex?
Oh, well, but I think you might have just answered it. I was going to say, what happens if the person hasn't been treated? Does it reach a stage where treatment, there's no viable treatment option?
It's not a case of no viable treatment. It's a case of what would have traditionally been treatment for syphilis is no longer an option. So what Daniel explained, no longer an option. You know, that person would require specialist care and they would need to be treated for where the syphilis was actually presenting, i.e. if it was presenting around the heart, cardiovascular or neurosyphilis, that takes on a whole new meaning. But I guess the one sort of treatment option that we haven't really talked about and is sort of quite, I guess, a breath of fresh air in some ways, is the use of similar to a PrEP framework. And that is, we know that some doctors are currently, for people that have acquired sort of, you know, 2 cases or 3 cases or 4 cases or 5 cases of syphilis, just so that we're not making Daniel the example here, that a person can go on a drug called doxycycline, be prescribed by their doctors, and it's essentially a once-day oral, and they will then prevent that person from acquiring syphilis.
So pre-exposure syphilis.
Syphylaxis. And it could be quite a determining option to bring syphilis rates under control, because the big thing was that syphilis had no presence really in this country until 2002. It was largely an STI that was seen in remote indigenous communities. And we had a little event called the Gay Games and syphilis arrived back in Australia. And it's pretty much been going on and building since then.
The Gay Games.
I just wanted to add there, you know, I think Jesse said about taking a pill, and that's how you used to get treatment was through this particular drug, which Guy mentioned, which I can't remember right now, but it's a really great thing to chat to your doctor about if you think that, you know, whether the sort of sex that you're having will involve quite a few people or you may be exposed again. It's a great conversation to have with your doctor.
Pre-exposure syphilaxis.
Either Daniel or Guy, where can the listener go to find out more about Living Positive Victoria and your work in the community, but also to find out some of the specifics about the Stamp Out Syphilis campaign?
Well, they can go to a sauna. They can go to an STI clinic because we've got posters out at all of those.
So I've got to go to a sauna now to find out. Okay.
Yeah, certainly receive sort of the most current information.
Okay. Have you got a particular website?
Yes, we do. I knew what Tex was referring to, but I just
like the sauna.
Don't spoil
my way of thinking.
Yeah. it's a specific URL, and it's stampoutsyphilis.info.
Stampoutsyphilis.info.
All one word. And what that URL does, it directs people through to a very specific page on the organisational website that is completely dedicated to syphilis.
Okay.
Fantastic, Guy and Daniel. It's been fantastic having you in the studio today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for the invitation.
And thank you, Daniel, for being so open and honest. I think it's quite brave of you to come in and talk about things in such a personal manner. Many people wouldn't.
Thanks. Thank you.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well on Joy 94.9, and it was great to have Guy and Daniel in the studio today.
It really was.
And speaking of Guy and Daniel from Living Positive Victoria, the Living Positive Victoria HIV Hep C co-infection show, which was originally broadcast here on Joy on World Hepatitis Day, is being rebroadcast here on Joy on Wednesday, the 2nd of September at 9 p.m. And then it's being repeated again on Saturday, the 5th of September at 5 p.m. It'll be well worth tuning in for. You'll also be able to catch it on the podcasts as well. But if you want to hear it live as you're listening to your radio, Wednesday, the 2nd of September at 9 p.m., then again on Saturday, the 5th of September at 5 p.m.
We'd like to also to remind everyone about the Drama Down Under Retrospective Art Exhibition, VAC, the Victorian AIDS Council is holding. That is at the... Where is that? Jessie,
can it's you at the Oakley Gallery on 15 Keel Street in Collingwood, and it's open weekdays 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. and Saturday from 12 noon to 5 p.m.
Perfect. And are there any messages?
There is one last message that I'd quickly like to mention, and it says, "Thanks, Tex, for mentioning women and HIV and STIs. It's important to be discussing the risk to all of us." From Sarah, which is very, very true. And thank you, Tex.
Thank you, Sarah. I'd like to very quickly just mention again, "Holding the Man," the film which we saw as part of a VAC fundraiser this week.
Yep.
Holding Man starts on Thursday, which is this Thursday, the 27th, and it will be running in theatres everywhere across Australia. Have a look on Facebook. Lots of people are forwarding the message about where it's going to be shown. And it's really important not just to attend fundraisers to see the movie, but also to actually go and see the movie in the theatre, to encourage your friends to go and see the movie. It's a great book, and it's been, as Jack, as you said, it's been transferred from a pretty average stage play into a sensational film. Really great.
Yep.
All right, that's all
it's
we've got time
to go.
I know, that happened really quick. We've got to say our quick goodbyes.
Thanks to everyone for listening today. We'll be back next week on Tuesday here at 12 noon. Well, Joy 94.9. Cheers, everyone.
Cheers
Jack.
Everyone.
Cheers, Jessie.
Bye.
Bye.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.